Welcome to episode 6 of The End Line. It's Tuesday, March 26th, and today we'll be talking about last weekend's loss at FC Dallas. We'll talk soccer with Bobby Warshaw and preview this weekend's match with the Houston Dynamo. We're back to full strength this week with four panelists who I'll let introduce themselves.
Hey, I'm Jordan Angeli. I talk soccer on the Altitude Sports Radio Network and hang out at a lot of Rapids practices. You like that, Abby? I used to play, so I guess
I tried to like reel it in and be very professional here. I'm Abby. I run the Burgundy Wave, and I also hang out at practice from time to time.
I'm Jordan Angeli, and I also hang out at Rapids practices quite a bit.
Your hair looks terrible today.
That's so mean to Jordan.
I'm Joseph, and I'm the founder and editor of Rapids Republic, and I'm also currently leading the fantasy, MLS fantasy group for the podcast.
Okay, I made it like 2 days, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I played forgot to look again, and I've left it.
All I know is that I'm on the top, like, and Connor's at the bottom of the table.
I'm coming. It took me a week to figure out how it works, like how you play MLS.
What are your
fantasy
team names?
What is my team? Boulder SC. I'm very
boring. If you can't remember your team name, you don't deserve to be at the top.
I did remember it. I just said it.
I don't remember. I haven't looked.
Mine's The Sun Will Come Out Kamara.
Wow.
Oh, that's really
good. Adorable, but doesn't score the points. Speaking of not getting points.
I'm in third, so.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm in second, if you're keeping track. So
making progress.
On the topic of no points, the Rapids played FC Dallas last weekend. Connor, a week ago, you were jetting off on Wednesday to Dallas, giving me confusing explanations about grass, which took me a while to understand what you were talking about. Looking at training last week, what was the vibe and approach being out there in Dallas?
The vibe and approach, we practiced in Frisco right by Toyota Stadium because they have like 15 training pitches down there. It's kind of like what we have out at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, where there's lots of fields. It was sunny, which was great, so I got a little bit of a tan. And the actual soccer stuff that happened was the guys seemed really loose, really laid back. But that's kind of been their vibe, like, I think, all preseason, heading into the regular season. Like, there's not a ton of pressure. You don't feel this tension where it's like, oh, man, if we don't get 3 points this weekend, we're toast. Like, the guys seem very confident. They're comfortable. There's so many jokes. Like, so many laughs. And I would tell the jokes right here, but I would be accused of name-dropping. So I'm going to keep some of the jokes to myself.
Which would be accurate.
It would be a confirmation of name-dropping, yeah.
I think it was funnier because Sam Nicholson was traveling with the team this weekend as well, so that's always fun.
And spice. I think Sam's the funniest guy
on
the team.
He's so funny.
We can't tell the jokes because then we'd be name-dropping, but...
Yeah, and you don't have the accent.
Well, what Connor said, I think, is important when you talk about teams and how they approach a game is there has to be a confidence but a looseness about it too, and like a relaxed, a subtle confidence. So I think that's what you see is like they go out there and they work hard. I don't think there's anything that we see at training that we're like, oh, this team definitely is not going to win, you know? I think they approached the game the way they needed to and had a good plan going down to Frisco early. At first, I was a little confused why we did that. But then looking back at the last month and a half in Colorado, it has literally snowed every single week in Denver. So to get down there and to actually know that you're going to train 2 days in a row before your game. On grass, to be able to do that, I think it was really smart. And the team seemed good, seemed in it. And I wouldn't say there was anything that like really stuck out.
Do you think that vibe, that kind of positive joking, but like we're also getting our work done, does it seem like it's durable, you know, if the season continues to show draws and losses? Like, is that going to turn into actually we just don't talk to each other and like go about our business?
Yeah, because I think that's like a valid question, especially on the outside looking in, where you're worried about your team and you're worried about where they are in the standings and all that. Like, I get that, but I think it's more about the sum of the parts. When you look at the guys training or practicing or whatever, is they joke, they laugh, but then, you know, Jordan, we talked about this morning at practice. When they're doing drills, when they're doing things, like today, what were they doing, 4-on-6 or something like that, it's competitive. And there's guys, like, getting so into it, and they are passionate. Like, you see guys, they miss a ball, They yell, they swear, they do all these things. And it's like, okay, they're into it. They're taking this seriously. And I think being able to disconnect, like, okay, we're joking, we're laughing, we're all mates. And then we step between the lines and it's business time.
Yeah. You got to know when to turn it on, when you can turn it off, right? Jordan, who like calls things to order? You know, who's like, hey, it's time?
Chad.
I mean, Chad yells. I don't know if he's always listened to, but he's always hollering.
Well, when it's time to go, there's a couple of definite vocal leaders within the squad. I think Tim is an easy one to pick out, but Tommy Smith is loud, and you always hear his voice in whatever they're doing. And I think we'll see that as Courtney gets integrated back in. He's one of those leaders that is like, I don't think he's always the loudest person, but when he talks to people, they are like very in tune and they're listening to what he says. So there are a few players who are a little bit louder than others, but I think what I've noticed is just the way that they, you know, you want to be on a team that's demanding and that they want to do things better, but I'm always listening to it like, how they're encouraging each other and how, like, if somebody plays a nice crisp ball, like Jack Price is telling them good ball, or I heard Keegan say it the other day, just like complimenting of the pace of the game and how it's supposed to be played. And when that happens, that's leadership too, right? Is like telling people they're doing a good job and keeping everybody's spirits high. So there's a few different leaders, but I would say Tim and Tommy are probably the loudest and the most intense.
I read a book that was talking about John Wooden from UCLA and the feedback that he would give his players, that it was less than 3 seconds long and it was within 5 seconds of the action. And I always think about that, like how frequent and short feedback is a lot better than the like meeting after practice where you say, hey, this is what I saw today.
That's actually something. I don't know if anybody here or who listens follows college football, but being from Kansas City, I was kind of doused in Kansas State football quite a bit, and they had legendary coach Bill Snyder until the end of this year. And they said one of the things that, you know, he was able to turn two stars and no star athletes into Big 12 champions. And they said one of the things that he did that was just different was at the end of practice every day, he would go to every single player and he would ask them, how did you get better today? And I think leadership like that, like, you know, obviously, the guys on the Rapids, they're not doing the same exact thing that Bill Snyder is doing, but it is that same competitive culture.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And the question I got to ask Porig after the meet the team, the state of the team last weekend. And the part I'm always interested is, like, it's one thing to sign players, especially young players, to the senior roster. It's another to help them, like, grow, right? And I think the, to me, biggest question for the organization this season into the next 5 seasons is this a place where you get better, right? Is it a place where players come in and their potential turns into reality? And so far you can't say yes. You might conjecture to say no. But speaking of players, Abby, I wanted to ask you about, I was surprised to see Tommy return to the starting lineup. Tommy Smith back there in center back. What was your reaction to seeing Tommy Smith in there?
I don't think it actually, I mean, obviously he scored the goal kind of by proximity, just
a
where
banger.
He had put himself.
Just
I don't
a banger.
Think that
he did
qualifies
did
as a banger.
It, he did put it all on the line. Like,
yes.
Got over.
Yeah. However, it doesn't really seem to matter who's in the back line right now, and they're still having the same issues. So I would argue that maybe his return didn't really have much of an impact.
Hmm. Any other thoughts on Tommy Smith?
Well, like, I like Tommy Smith. I think he's a better option than the two center backs we replaced him with for the opening few games of the season. It would be Wynn and Wilson. But ultimately, like, you got to see, like, results. You got to see, you know, verifiable changes, like, you know, that come from that. And, you know, Tommy had, you know, he scored the goal, but otherwise had a pretty quiet and some might argue poor game at the back.
Don't you want a quiet game from your center backs?
I want my center back to be quiet.
You don't want their name heard. You want everything taken care of in the midfield, and the ball never gets to the end of your goal.
So you're giving up on the goal he scored? You don't want to hear that name?
The what?
The goal he scored.
Oh, well, that's different. That's on the other end of the pitch.
Okay. Well, we heard his name. Jordan, the first half of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the team has struggled out of the gate. Like, the first 15 minutes have not been a strength so far. Is that what you saw in the first half? There in Frisco?
I would say on the road. They haven't.
Kansas City was a hot start.
Yeah. At home, I feel like, and the snow classico, I think you have to kind of say that was just a weird game. And so I really honestly don't count that in many things because it was just so bizarre. And it wasn't a soccer game. I think that's what Benny said after the game. It's like, that's not a soccer game. But in Seattle and then in Dallas, I do think they've struggled to start well. And I don't know what that is because there has to be a switch that flips, right, when they get onto the pitch. And it has to be a little bit extra, especially when you go to an away game in these two places, right? Dallas is really good at home. Seattle is historically very good in their building with the atmosphere that they can create. So I don't know what the answer is there. I think it just has to be something that the players address and say, we have to be better at this. And there's ways to do that. Like, you don't have to play out of the gate. Like, I think sometimes just killing the game and killing some momentum that another team is going to have straight off the bat, like, Dallas wants to come at you at their house and get a goal early. Okay, well, just dump the ball in behind them, turn them around and press them and try to keep them locked in. And if they start to build again, dump it again. And then once you kill some of that momentum, then you can start to play. And I think that we just are trying to play maybe too quickly in certain situations. And I don't know if that's going to be – I mean, it hasn't been our strength in the first two away matches.
Something I wanted to add on top of that is that, I mean, I know we can't take anything from, like, the snow game against Portland in terms of, you know, broad trends or, like, statistical analysis. But at the very beginning of that game, before snow had really even accumulated much on the field, like, in the opening 2 minutes, the Rapids were already on their back foot. They were already facing – I think Portland had, like, one really good chance in, like, the first – 60 seconds of that game after Rosenberry got burned on the corner. And I only remember it so fondly because, like, I was sitting, like, right there when it happened. And it's just frustrating because it seems like three out of the first four games of the season, like, the opening minutes, the Rapids just seem like they're under a barrage of constant attack and they don't really know what much to do. And you can kind of write off the SKC game because, you know, they had to pace themselves through that match. It was like their sixth game in, what, 22 days?
Seventh game in
24. I was close. So I don't know. It's just frustrating to see, like, from the opening four games, the Rapids can't just really seem to start right. They can't start off on
I don't think it's fair to throw out the Kansas City game just because they played 7-24, especially with Peter Vermes and the system they run and the way their
sporting
culture
fit.
Is. Their
hashtag
depth.
Sporting
sure.
fit.
Their depth is, like, I mean, because then you get to the point of, all right, well, let's look at this. Well, you can throw that example out because of this. You can throw that out because of that. Like, at some point, you just need to take the result as a whole and say, okay, this is the way it is.
Sure. I guess what I'm still saying, though, is that 75% of the Rapids games we've seen so far, we have not looked comfortable in the opening 2 minutes to the point where we either concede or give up a really strong chance that arguably should have gone in the back of the net from the other team, right? And that's just, simply put, it's just not a good trend, right? Like, yeah. It doesn't look good.
Well, I agree with that. I don't agree with the Portland game because that's a team who didn't have very many changes. And you look at the Rapids roster, that's the first time a lot of those players ever played at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in a real game together. And I've been in those situations. It's not like the first game you're going to be like, oh, wow, we all understand where everybody's going to be at every single time.
Yeah,
you know?
Portland made one change between their MLS Cup team.
Yeah, so I really don't. Like, and although it didn't snow, it was freezing. Like, it's just a different atmosphere to play in as a player. And I have to back the players up and say, like, that's a tough one to play in and really count as, like, oh, this is how we're going to be this year. So that's why I scrapped that game.
Back in the lads.
Yeah.
Away the lads.
Woo!
Jordan, do you think there's anything mechanical to look at there in terms of, like, how you're warming up, how you're coming out of the locker room? How, like, do those things make a difference in that first 2 or 5 minutes? You know what I'm saying? Like, all the stuff you do right before the game, does it matter?
Yeah, of course it matters. I have not been in proximity to them to see, like, to actually watch warm up and see what is going on and see what the vibe is and feel that and hear how they're talking to each other, hear if they're buzzing or not. You know, I don't know what that feeling is like. So I can't say that they're not warming up for properly or not. But at the end of the day, like, they each have to look at themselves, and I think they will after this last performance, because it was mentioned multiple times in the post game that we didn't start well, we didn't start well, we didn't start well. We heard that from everybody we talked to. So if everybody's saying that, then the responsibility is on me, you know? I have to be the one to make the change, and it feels like that's kind of the vibe I got from everything we heard.
So you're going to fix it personally, Jordan?
I'm just saying, like, they were saying I have to fix it.
Yeah. If they would just give Jordan a chance.
Yeah, let's do it. Couple things. I got to shoot some photos pregame.
Heck yeah, Jeff.
Down on the field and getting out of here. And being down by the goal when people are taking a lot of shots and they bang off those advertising boards, it is scary. Though you don't realize when you're up in the stands just how hard those balls are moving. Yeah.
That's why goalies are so weird.
Yeah.
Hey.
You gotta admit, girl. Goalies are weird because those balls are so, they're flying at you. Like, you have to be a little off to be like, I'm going to stop this.
Yep. Well, yeah, because then you get to be the goat.
Exactly, but I'm just saying, like,
save. Like,
sorry, you are.
I would say that it's probably the same as scoring.
I love goalies. I love goalies because I could never be one, and I need you. So that's why I love you.
Jordan needs me.
Joseph. Andres Shinyashiki made his first start. There was concern, like hangover from college schedule and coming out too much during games and getting up to 90 minutes fit. We saw
him
come.
Who was concerned about that?
It's like just people keep bringing it up.
Oh, right? Those people.
Yeah, those people. Those people.
He wasn't acclimated. I don't remember who was bringing it up.
I thought everyone hyped him up. I didn't think anybody was really, like, wondering if he could do it.
But no. There's no question about whether Andre can, you know, be a good player, because I think he's already demonstrated that he has, like, at least the bare minimum skills to be, you know, a decent MLS player. I think he can be much more than that.
MVP.
But the question for Rookie Andre is after, what was it? How long was he with Denver? Like 2 or 3 years? Or did he go the full four?
Don't know.
Okay. Do you?
Yeah,
I thought
you
went the full four.
Four years. Yeah. Okay. So he went
You're
4 years.
You're the stats years. Guy, Joseph. Yeah. Come on,
Joseph. I don't have it. Can't do this to us now. I can't memorize it all. It's so hard, right? Okay. So 4 years at Denver, where you know you're playing under college substitution rules, where you can come out in the first half and you have to stay on the bench for the remainder of the half you come out, but you can still come back in during the second half. And I remember seeing, you know, there were people who were making the contention, right, that Andre might have some trouble going a full 90 minutes, you know, because it's just something he never had to do at Denver. You know, if you're going to have the option to rest your players, a lot of coaches are going to take that, right? And a lot of college coaches do. So I think Andre had a decent game. He had two really good chances around the 20th to 30th minute. I think he had two shots on target right then. One of them was a really good chance that he should have buried. But he sent it straight into Jesse Gonzalez's hands. And I thought that was a little bit disappointing. But, I mean, he's getting into space. He's making the right moves. He's more dynamic at forward than anything else we had last year. And he's not even our best forward on the roster this season. So, like, I mean, you got to say, like, I mean, he had a decent performance. Like, you could have expected more from him, though.
I like that when the ball's at his feet, you have that gut feeling of, like, something good might happen. You know, and there has been a lot of times with the Rapids front line in the past with the ball at the feet, I'm thinking something embarrassing is about to happen, right? Like a Brown field goal, you know, 30 yards over the crossbar. And it's just like, oh my God. And I don't think Shinyashiki's not consistent yet, right? And like, we didn't see him go the full 90, but I don't know, he just has that vibe of like good things could happen.
I am not the person that thinks a forward has to go full 90, though. I really don't think that, because I think that's one of the best times to bring on a different player is in the last 15 minutes of the game, 20 minutes of the game, and bring a spark, and that is the easiest place to do it.
Well, yeah, you look at the best forwards in the world, like Sergio Aguero. Pep usually sends him out there for 75 minutes, and then they bring on someone else, or Antoine Griezmann for Atletico Madrid and the France national team. Like, he rarely goes the full 90.
What I liked about Andre is I feel like he really did settle into the game a little bit more. We saw a couple times him, like, feeling the pressure and like flicking the ball on. There were a few times where I think this was like a consensus overall is like, as we try to build out of the back, we have to have players that are going to hold the ball. And we lost the ball way too many times on one touch passes. And I said it to Connor. I was like, if Shinyashiki and Kamara have to hold the ball there and they have to wait for that support. And that's a tough place to be in because you are getting whacked. Like you are getting kicked on your ankles, on your Achilles, like everything is getting stepped on, but you have to hold the ball and bring more players in. And I think there were a few times in the game where the Rapids lost the ball in those just one touch situations, getting the ball up to the front runners, and it just then there's no rhythm that can be started because you lose the ball too quickly.
But not being able to hold the ball was an issue last year too, because if Baji got stuck on an island up there by himself, he just had no idea what to do.
But he held the ball, he just didn't have anyone to come and help him. So that's where there's a disconnect, right? Like, okay, so we're holding the ball now. Where's that next player in line to come help? And I think that there were times where those players were supporting, but it was just a one-touch pass when you can do the same thing efficiently in two touches just as fast because you can put more pace on the ball after you get the first touch, second touch.
Connor, I believe it is true. I wasn't there. Were y'all at the Burgundy Affair last year? Did Tommy Smith win the Golden Boot?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I know he had the most goals.
Yeah, but
that's
I don't
who
know.
Wins the
I
Golden
mean,
Boot people.
Baji had more goals, but I don't know if you just like skip it, right?
Well he wasn't on the team at the end of the year.
I understand.
You don't give it to somebody who left.
Jeffrey, but maybe you just don't give it.
Jeffrey, you're getting roasted by the ladies in this room right now.
Yeah.
For your line of
questioning. I appreciate it. I was actually asking Connor a question. With Kamara's like clear aerial skill, right? And a place where he's really comfortable. Is it necessary for Tommy Smith to be like crashing up on offense all the time?
Yeah, because then you have two tall guys in the box.
100%.
Then you have two big guys. And look, that's how we got the goal, was two big guys in the box. Kai Kamara, which I watched the highlights of it. I have no idea that man got into the stratosphere the way that he did above everyone else. And then to get the velocity on the ball off the header when your body is already going that way as well. And all Tommy has to do is just run into the ball and it goes into the back of the net.
If the Rapids are going to win games and get
they
points
need to
this
put
season,
Tommy and Kai.
As the top two.
Well what I was going to say is that they need to execute on set pieces,
absolutely.
Right? Like because
that's what we did Saturday.
Well, we did. Goal. And that's great, right? But Shinyashiki also needs to bury that chance in like the 20th minute, right?
Yeah, we could talk about
FC
all
Dallas that. Defended that so well because it was Kai Kamara, I forget who was dribbling, and Shinyashiki, and they absolutely cut Kai Kamara off and said, "Play it to the rookie. See if the rookie can score." And yeah, he should have finished, but I appreciate the way he shot the ball because it was across the face of goal. If there's a deflection, it's coming back out to the runners that are going towards the goal. So like in the end, it wasn't awful from a rookie. They defended it very well.
And I'm not necessarily blaming him for the points dropped because you can't blame a single player for, you know, dropping points on the night. It's just frustrating because I felt he had a fairly average game otherwise. And if he had buried that, we're here talking about like how great he is,
life
right?
Life of a forward.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just unfortunate that like the big chance he got, he wasn't able to execute on.
I think that's something that you're going to get that with young players. You know, we're going to see Cole Bassett and Sam Vines. We talked about this last year. They're going to have periods where they look like all-stars because they have that talent and they have that ceiling. And they're going to have periods where it's like, okay, I can tell that you're young. I can tell that this is your first real, what's the word, of whatever into professional soccer. Like you're going to be able to tell. But what's important now is for Andre to take that moment and to build on it for next time, which is what I think he's going to be set up well to do with guys like Kai Kamara and Diego Rubio, you know, mentoring him almost.
We have to talk about the set pieces more because I do think it is really crucial that the Rapids get the set piece situation right as they progress through the season. I don't think that our corner kick services are of the quality that they need to be yet. We're playing it into a place where there's just too many bodies there, and I feel like playing like a far post ball with the ability to bring it back across the face of goal. I say this all the time, but there is no, and when we look at Houston this next week and they don't play with people on the post, like this is an opportunity that I think that far post ball is going to be really on. But sending two players forward, if you have Kai Kamara, everybody's eyes are going to go to Kai Kamara. And yes, he is going to still win the ball like he did the other night. But if you don't have another player in there threatening, it's just like, okay, Kai, good luck. Try to win it, and we'll just be here trying to pick up your scraps. But, like, if you send Tommy in as well, who has, you know, I said goalies have screw loose. We have screws loose too, is like going up there and being like, I'm going to win this ball between the keeper and me.
With my head,
you know, and like
my head versus their fist.
Honestly, Tommy has that like willingness to sacrifice to score a goal. And he said after the game, like, I would give all my goals away for the team to win. But like, he would also give his body away for the team to win. And I think that if you have that mentality for not just one, but two players in the box, it's going to create a situation that's really hard to defend, and the Rapids need that, and then pick up the scraps, right? Then who's alert? Who's that next player who's going to say, oh, I'll just tap this in. I'll put it off my thigh, off my back. It doesn't matter.
Well, the main reason I noticed that we needed like such like an improvement on set pieces coming into this season was like I remembered all the times we had those corner kicks last year where everybody in the stands is doing the Viking clap, which is great. I love like the whole crowd like getting into like this one play because, you know, it has the potential for, you know, like the end of the now I'm blanking on the two game winners that are game tires that
Minnesota, Tommy Smith had a game winner into the North goal, and then
it's our own little
FC
Wikipedia.
FC Dallas, last game of the year, Tommy Smith had the winner in the South goal.
Yeah, so I remember the one against FC Dallas. I forget.
Exactly.
But point is, like, that's a huge moment in the crowd, right? And, like, if you get the whole crowd in on that, like, the Viking clap and, like, the ball goes in the back of the net.
Are you saying that it's good to score goals on corners?
Of course. Okay. Are you saying it's not?
I'm just saying they're not doing it. That's
no,
the problem.
I'm just saying we're using a lot of words to get there.
Shouldn't corner kicks? This is something that always frustrates me as a fan.
But wait, Jeff. What I was going to say about set pieces really quick was we're in a really good position this year to do well on them because of Kai Kamara and Tommy Smith, but then the guy who's going to be delivering the ball in is going to be Benny Failhaber most times. So you're talking about a guy who is in the top tier of elite in MLS at placing a ball, whether it's a free kick or a corner kick in Failhaber, and then you're talking about guys like Tommy Smith and Kai Kamara who have, I guess if height can be elite, they have elite stature and sure. agility and all that stuff.
And so leaping ability.
So yeah. we're in a good position with that. And then when Schuberg's in there as well, you know, he's obviously tall.
It's a lot of words to say that we have better players this year than last year.
It's a lot of words.
Shouldn't fans be, like, really disappointed and kind of pissed off about bad corner kick placement? Like, the ball's not moving. You're standing there. You've been practicing taking corners for 20 years. Like, shouldn't it be really good almost every time?
I mean, yeah, fans have a right to be upset about everything that goes wrong because they're pros, they're getting paid. But corner kicks can be a particularly frustrating one because you're right, it's like a free throw in basketball. There's nobody in your way, the ball's stopped, you get to kick it wherever you want.
It's just a wasted opportunity if you don't do anything with it.
And it feels like opportunities are so scarce with the way the Rapids play, just like the quality we have on the field, that, you know, we need to take advantage of those every single time. Like,
Abby, in the second half of games, like, maybe this is kind of scar tissue from the past, but when it gets to be 70 minutes, 75th minute, I sometimes get this sinking feeling like something bad is about to happen. You know, is that fair? Is it unfair? Is that like just soccer? Is that the Rapids? What do you think?
I think it's partially just sports. Like, when your team is winning and the minutes are counting down, you're like counting on them to hold on to it. But I mean, I think it is maybe a little bit of like PTSD from last season. Cause I think like this season, it's not going great, but I think all things considered, we can see that it's better than last year. We can see that the players are better. Things are going better than last year. We're just not getting those results yet. So I'm not quite ready to have like that sinking feeling.
I didn't really feel like in the last two games, honestly, well, maybe it's just the feeling that I got, but in the last two games, I didn't feel like we were going to drop points. I thought we were going to hold on to the lead against Sporting Kansas City. Like, I really felt like that. And then I felt like we were not going to give up points in Dallas. Like, I don't know if I'm being optimistic,
yeah,
but like,
I never
I don't have
I never
that
doubt your optimism.
I don't have that feeling. And
Well, based on how we were playing in the second half against Dallas, you would think that we would have gone on to at least get a draw out of that. Because the second half, I mean, it was – the Rapids were pretty – I mean, they weren't dominating, but they were playing much better than the first half. Dallas wasn't getting many chances. Rapids were having more of the ball. Like, it just seemed like either a draw or, you know, maybe you get that winner, that late winner. And it just went the other way.
Yeah. From our perch in Frisco, Jordan and I, it felt like the Rapids were the better team and playing better. And I thought we were going to find a winner. Like, I felt like maybe it was going to be a Kai Kamara ball in the 85th minute or something like that. Because it just seemed like after the Tommy Smith goal, it seemed like, okay, exhale. This is the position we expected to be in late in the game, finding a chance for a game-winning goal. We conceded, but we got it back. No big deal. We'll go find the winner. And then, you know, one mistake, two mistake becomes dropping all the points.
And I think, too, that's the difference between last year. Because last year it was just kind of a hot mess, like, the whole time. So you're like, God, are we going to hold on to this? Are they going to score 3 goals in the last 5 minutes? Like, you just really didn't know what was going to happen because you didn't trust what was happening on the field. But I think this year, like, they're playing well at the end of the game. It doesn't look like they're going to give something up, and then something just happens. And I don't know if you want to call it like a fluke by the other team or like a lapse in judgment or focus or what it is, but it's more unexpected, I think, than last year.
Let's do last takeaways or like your feeling coming out of the Dallas game.
We have two takeaways. Sorry. One, Keegan Rosenberry, when he saved that goal in the first half, he jumped higher than Dom Baji. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but the kid...
Our little Amish boy from Ronks,
the kid has some major athleticism, and I thought in attack he had a solid performance. He should have had an assist on that low-driven ball that went across the face of goal. That was beautifully played. One thing I take away, when the Rapids had possession, it's too slow. They get the ball and there's options there, and it's like they take a touch and they look up and they're like, okay, where am I gonna play? And by that time they can play that person, but sometimes it's not on, or like the defense has shifted, and instead of making the defense shift where you want them to shift by playing the ball a little bit quicker and setting the pace of the passes, it's just a little too slow. And I think you could see that with the difference with the way Dallas was playing and the difference the way we played, because we both wanted to do the same things, right? We wanted to keep possession, move the team from side to side, from each sideline, and then try to find the gaps and break those gaps down, right? And the Rapids, it was just too slow. There was a couple instances in the first half where they did it well and they were quick and sharp in possession and they got to switch the point of attack and they broke the team down, and it was really good buildup. But that has to be consistent. And if Cole Bassett's in there, I want him to get the ball. I want him to play it. I want him to get it back and move it to the other side. And then Jack to get it. Play it to Kellen. Get it back. Move it. And those four in the middle have the ability to set the pace of the game with their movement and their passing and the weight on their pass. And it just needs to be another level up.
Oh, it's my turn.
Abby, takeaways from the game?
I think my takeaway is that I'm starting to lose a little bit of confidence in the team. However, I think there's just not a lot you can take from these games about whether they're going to make the playoffs or, you know, all these conversations that people are starting to have already. I think my takeaway is that we still need to be patient and just let them get into a routine, let everybody get healthy, get a few more games under their belt, and then kind of start evaluating things.
I have a quick question, because I've heard that a lot, like, oh, is this team going to make the playoffs? Like, we should be worried about playoffs. When do you start worrying about that? Because it's like 4 games into the season. It seems to me like there's still a little bit of cushion room here to like, but am I wrong in saying that?
Typically teams that start on a winless streak don't make the playoffs.
I think Seattle has for a couple years.
They have a poor first half of the season.
No, Jordan, but you're right.
I'm just wondering, like,
the concern
agree.
Is
I
they aren't going to pick up the points later.
Right.
So that we're dropping points now that we're really going to need in games as other teams get hot and heat up after the summer and that kind of thing. That's what I think from my perspective.
Yeah.
I think Jordan, I think you're right on it, because, it's early. Like, there's so many games left. And if you look at it from a macro view, from a bird's eye point of view, how many teams are in the league? 24 teams. Everybody is going to have a lull.
Right.
Everybody is going to have a month or a month and a half, a 6-8 week time where they just play bad soccer and they don't look good and they drop points and everybody's frustrated and then they snap out of it. And it's like, okay, they're fine. Like if this is simply the Rapids lull, if this is simply just a trough in the year and then things pick up and they hit a hot streak and they're going into summer flying high in playoff position, then everybody forgets all about the start.
That's why the next few games are important, because if they don't get to that hot streak,
guys, the next few games are important.
Here we are.
Joseph, last takeaways.
All right. My last takeaway is that I'm still not very confident in the defense, and I've actually seen a lot that has lessened my confidence even more over the last few weeks. And that's unfortunate, because I want to see Tommy Smith come in and I want to see the back line get better, and it didn't. Like, I want to see I want to see Rosenberry make plays like the one Jordan was talking about, like, all day. But, you know, he does that, and then, like, 2 minutes later, he gets burned on the wing, right? Like, I love Keegan Rosenberry. I think he's going to bring a lot to the team. But, like, early on in these first four games, like, he was really hot and cold. There's a lot to like and a lot to dislike. And I just don't really have a strong feeling that this defense is going to stop enough, like, or be formidable enough, to hold out like those close leads towards the end of end of games.
The thing I'm really hoping for, that I was a little sad to start seeing. Obviously, this fan community is super small, right? Like, we can list off pretty much all the people who participate in social media or whatever around the team. And this week was when I first saw people giving you kind of the, like, well, it's going to be a long season, you know? And I just don't want to get to that place yet. Like, if it's 8 games winless, 10 games winless, then okay. Like, then I accept it. But there's too much potential left, I think. And it's what, I don't understand the fun. Like, why is it fun to be
come over here,
this sucks.
And for what it's worth,
I'm optimistic.
We have fun here.
Well, and for what it's worth, like, the opening four games of the season, all very challenging matchups, right? It's not like the Rapids had a super easy schedule. It's not like we were playing, you know, the perennial, like, bottom feeders. I mean, not that there are really that many of them in MLS, but it's not like we're playing, we're one of them. But it's not like we're playing, like, Chicago or, like, Philly consecutively, right? Like, at home. We're playing, you know, we had to go to Seattle on the road. You have to go to Dallas on the road. You know, you have that snow game and the ridiculous red card. And Sporting is just always a good team. And, you know, Rapids typically get a draw against them at home. Like, historically, like, that is the result that the Rapids get when they host Sporting KC. I'm hoping, starting with this weekend against Houston, that we see the Rapids come out and have a full, complete performance. I want to see a win. I know we'll get to that a little bit later.
Before we get too deep into Houston, yesterday I got a chance to talk to Bobby Warshaw and get his perspective on the Rapids, what he saw in that FC Dallas game. I asked him a couple questions about how to judge coaching, as something I'm really interested in, and the impact of the youth movement, and a preview of this week's Rapids-Houston match. So here goes.
Hey, this is Jeff Kasmer from the N-Line, and today I'm joined by Bobby Warshaw from MLSsoccer.com. How you doing, Bobby?
What's up, Jeff? Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Want to get your inside take, your eagle eye, on this FC Dallas-Colorado Rapids match that we had last Saturday. What stood out to you from that game?
Ooh, well, the first thing was just how freaking good FC Dallas were, right? Like, that team was, over the last, four games for them, they've been excellent. But this one in particular, they were fantastic. You know, like, I'm not sure, I mean, we can get into what Colorado didn't do well or didn't do well enough. But just, like, on face value, Dallas were awesome. They were so, so comfortable on the ball, so confident on the ball. Their attacking rotations to pull defenses out with having the center mids and the wingers and the outside backs all work in unison to find gaps was just all around impressive. And more than anything, just fun to watch.
Yeah, last week you wrote about the triple pivot. Did you see that playing out during the game?
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't quite as excellent because they were missing two of the three starters. Sure. But at the same time, the guys that they brought in, both homegrowns, did well. So it wasn't quite as awesome. But what I will say that what they're improving on, or what they were particularly good against the Rapids, is think of, God, we're getting straight into the weeds early, but screw it. you know, like every single player works in unison. So if one player goes in, two or three other players have to move. And I think the game against the Rapids on Saturday was their best overall performance in moving in unison, if that makes sense. So the three center mids weren't quite as good. They were fine, especially for young homegrowns. But the team as a whole, I was like, holy crap, these guys are really coming together.
Do you think there could be a coordination advantage there where when you have so many homegrowns, right? I think we think about homegrowns as like plugging into the senior roster, but at some tipping point where you have a bunch of them, the senior roster is essentially becoming the youth roster, right? It's like these guys know each other, they've been playing together for seasons. Like, is it possible that they have enough of those homegrowns that they're getting like this coordination advantage of guys who already know each other?
Ooh, that's a good point, or maybe a very good point. I don't have an answer. I'll tell you one of the competitive advantages to having homegrowns, especially when you're like Luchi Gonzalez at FC Dallas or Oscar Pereja before him, when you're the one that blooded these guys through, is that they will run through a wall for you and they will do whatever you say. So when Luchi Gonzalez says, when this player has the ball, you tuck in, they're going to tuck in. They're not going to try and take some autonomy or self-agency and say, this time I don't feel like doing it, or this time I'm going to do my own thing. You can trust that that machine is going to run the same way or the way you ask it every single time. And now, of course, there's downsides to that, right? If players can't think on their own, it might catch up to you. But if it clicks and it works and everything you've planned is the right choice or are the right choices, then you can have a really nice performance. So for me, that's the big advantage of having these young guys, is that they'll just run through a wall for the guy that gave them their first professional appearance.
In watching the game and especially rewatching the highlights, it really gave me the feeling like if you have a more clinical striker in up top there, that Dallas scores several goals there. Do you think Baji is going to, and obviously Baji being a former Rapid, like we're all familiar with his play, can he be the guy for that team?
Ooh. I'm definitely not going to say no, because one thing we have to remember, it's the same thing with Kansas City, and everyone's like, they need a new number nine. They need a new number nine. You can't both say that the system and the functionality of the group is fantastic and works in unison, and then that they need to bring a new star player into that, and that the whole thing is going to work as well together. So Don Baji misses all these chances, but maybe only that player only gets all the chances because of what Don Baji offers the group. His ability to stretch a field, his ability to close down players quickly, his ability to maybe read certain situations. So, of course, the natural answer is to say, well, yeah, if they had a better finisher, someone more clinical, then they would score more goals. But at the same time, you got to give a guy like Don Baji, or, you know, who was it last year, Diego Rubio or Kyrie Shelton for SKC, you have to give them credit for doing all the small things to get those chances. And it's just a trade-off, right? I think one of the other answers there, too, is, and to tell a quick story for myself, my rookie year, my head coach was like, man, I need you to be able to turn out of pressure. I need you to be able to play through balls. I need you to be able to dominate possession. And I looked at him. I was like, coach, you got to go get Sergio Busquets, right? Like, you got to go pay $6 million for the guy from Barcelona.
Right.
So, yeah, we can say that maybe FC Dallas needs an upgrade at center forward. But to find the guy that, like, does all the little things that Don Baji does and also finish, it's going to cost you a fair amount in the transfer market. So I'm perfectly fine with Don Baji. I'll probably write all year, man, what if they had a new player up top? Maybe they should give a Cobra, Andrasic, or Jesus Ferrer more of an opportunity. But while also citing, like, yeah, Don Baji does a ton of stuff to help that team.
On Colorado's side of the ball, what, if anything, like, stood out to you?
Ooh, so, God, I worked all week, especially, like, all the last 48 hours, trying to come up with a good answer for this question, because I knew you would ask me about the state of the Rapids. And Jeff, I'll tell you, I don't have one.
Yeah.
For multiple reasons. One is that, had they had Kamara, Rubio, and the four starters together yet? Maybe just that first game, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, there is always somebody missing from that front six.
Right.
Or maybe it was the road game at Seattle. So you go out off in the offseason, you work very carefully to bring in all these pieces, Benny Failhaber, Mosquita, Kellen Acosta last year, and then, of course, Rubio and Kamara. And I'm thinking to myself before the season, like, that's a playoff front six. If they fit together, I love that team. But you play in the snowstorm, then you play on the road at Seattle, then Failhaber gets sick, then Rubio goes international duty. So it feels like we haven't really seen this team, and I don't know what to make of it. And this is, all comes back to my major point about the Rapids right now is, like, their center backs are the biggest question. Ultimately, I still like with that. I still trust with that front six. And I hope we'll talk more about who that front six should be, actually. But, like, you, if you're going to play diamond, if you're going to play the way they want to play, really, if you probably just want to win at all in Major League Soccer, you need a friggin' center back. Like, you need a dominant player in some way. And I'm not sure they have that right now. And I feel guilty saying that and, like, disrespecting the players and the team. But I think if you're going to honestly evaluate the Rapids, it's like, who is their version of a playoff caliber center back?
Right, right. And I think you have four or five guys who can do a decent job, right? Can hold down the fort. But there isn't, at least right now, any one of them where you say, like, that's the guy, right? Everything rotates around them.
And we can say all we want about how great FC Dallas were. FC Dallas won that game in the 82nd minute because Axel Schubert kicked the ball right to them. You know, like that was an elementary clearance, probably even a pass. I forget who was it. Jack Price maybe was there. And so he plays Jack Price. Jack Price plays out the other side. And maybe they're going the other way in FC Dallas. And it's, and granted, this is happening to like half the teams around the league right now. But Colorado's got to figure that out.
Yeah. And it feels like those kinds of breakdowns, right? Or last week when we were in the stadium here in Denver and, you know, you got the 1-0 lead against Kansas City and just creeping into 60, 70th, 80th minutes, you start to feel like, oh, some kind of like Rapids thing is about to go down, right? And then you give up the free kick and it's like, here it comes, you know, here it comes. And I wonder around like depth, I think is still an issue. I don't know if the right, you know, I think typically when we talk about depth, it's like how many guys are like serviceable, right? When you need someone to fill into a spot, how far can you go? But it's tough when your first options are already kind of like serviceable options. And then your next ones just, it doesn't, as you were saying, like if something's missing from that front six, it feels like they're just, it can't spark. Like you don't have the ingredients.
Right. And I'm not going to say that. I actually think that like Shinashiki is good and I wouldn't mind him starting at center striker. I think Cole Bassett is good and probably should start. So I don't mind the fact that you can maybe put eight or nine different players in that front six, but you need to do it, allow them to fail and mess up a couple times and gel and then start to thrive. So it's not so much the fact that it has looked bad on any single occasion. It's just, I think that they need time to come together. They need time to play together and go through these lumps. So that then they can start to figure it out. And it's the fact that they haven't had that opportunity that makes me unsure of what they're going to be.
After this game, or even during it a little bit, we started to see some of the optimism turn to, oh, it's going to be a long season again, you know? And I think Rapids fans have reason to be skeptical or kind of like easily knocked off track, seeing results that you're not excited about out on the field. So I think what you're saying is until you see that starting six, that top choice six up front for a couple games, don't judge yet. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly. Especially since what they're doing isn't just the cookie cutter 4-4-2 or cookie cutter 4-2-3-1 that players have run for years. You know, how the two forwards, I mean, think about the number of times that Kai Kamara has played in a two striker setup, and same with Diego Rubio. Right? How many times has Jack Price played in a diamond in his career? Like, where do you move off your teammate? How do you defend? Where do you pressure? I mean, there's a ton of decisions that go into all this that just take time to figure out. And I'm a Rapids fan. I mean, I guess that like things have happened in the past and you're a little bit pessimistic, but I think there's a tremendous amount of growth opportunity and that this team, if it clicks, could be great. And I definitely wouldn't give up on that yet.
I think there is understandably a bit of like skepticism around coaching, right? Anytime the results on the field aren't as strong as you want, there's always going to be a tension on the coach. If you're watching a Luchi Gonzalez or an Anthony Hudson or both in their first pro level head coaching position, what are you hoping to see from them beyond just wins?
Yeah. So man, what I would add first is, you know, it's kind of my job to talk about coaches and the good and the bad. But now that I've started to coach, I can acknowledge that if you're listening, you haven't done it, it is one of the hardest things I've ever experienced. Every single day, you know, I'm a youth coach, and I'm sure it's the same thing for Lucci and Anthony to go from being a youth coach or a national team coach or professional coach. There's just something new. And like, if you've never done it before, you have an idea of how to handle it, but you're not sure about anything. So I can only imagine what's on their plates getting this job for the first time. All right, re-ask the question though. I felt a need to throw that out there and I forgot what the basic question even was.
No, I mean, I think it reminds me, so like my background is in classroom teaching. And when you look at first year teachers, people go into teaching, like I was in school for 12 or 16 years. Like I know how this goes. And then you go and try and do it. And it turns out like, it's pretty different and it's really hard, right? And a first year teacher is pretty garbage almost all the time. Second year teacher is somewhat like serviceable. And it's about your fourth year that you start to like find your way. You know, is that like reasonable to ask of fans and organizations of say like, hey, give them 4 years and then we'll see, then you can judge.
Ooh. So my natural instinct is to say no, but I'm also a 76ers fan and it is worth it now, you know, like 4 or 5 years into the process, it's worth it. And if you truly believe in the person, the problem is that there's so much variation that you just have no idea. Like you can put all this risk and all the sunk cost into someone, but you have no idea if it's going to turn out. So yeah, if it turns out, 3 or 4 years is absolutely worth it. Because you think about professional sports, like most fans are let down. Like I think that's a context we often forget. You know, like 31 of 32 teams in American sports or 23 and 24 in MLS end up being disappointed. So if you can somehow like moderate that disappointment to ensure consistently you're the one of the 3 or 4 teams that's fighting for trophies, that's a trade-off that I would take as a fan. So yes, but the hard part is just ensuring that you're doing this trade-off for 4 or 5 years and there's a payout at the end. And I don't know how you can reliably predict that, even if they do really believe in the person they hired.
When you watch these teams who are playing more and more youth players, right, and the Dallases, Real Salt Lake, Colorado, New York, Red Bulls, do you notice them simplifying the tactics and their strategy to the benefit of the younger players, or are the younger players expected to just like go all in?
So I see the opposite actually. And the reason for that is, and this is what we don't want to expect, and this is something that I just talk to Doyle and Ben Bear about all the time, is this idea that young players are good enough to play. And I'm telling you, like if you're training every single day, that 18-year-old just doesn't, on a daily basis, with how he plays, with how he is as a professional, his habits, usually isn't good enough, right? You can go out to the world market and find someone who can outcompete that player for a position. But what you can also do is you can take that young player, you can take that player who maybe on an overall scale isn't quite as good as the other players in the world market and set up a game plan, a specialized plan to fit his skill set. And you take Alex Moyle, right? Like Alex Moyle isn't going to go start for Atlanta United probably. Right, he's like not good enough at what they want to do. But you put him on the Red Bull scheme, and that guy was a starter on a team that won Supporters Shield. So I do that. What we find on these teams that play young players, because often the young players aren't overall as good as some of the other players in the market, is that the coaches give them more refined goals. Hey, like Paxton, here's your 3 or 4 things. Nail this. I believe in you. Go do it. And you specialize those 3 or 4 things to what fits the player's skill set. So I think it's the opposite of dumbing it down. It's actually specializing it and making it more detailed to really just give the player only 1 or 2 things to focus on.
There's a reasonable argument, I think, that the ideal form of coaching essentially gets an overperformance out of players, right? And not that you ever want to see a player struggle, but when somebody does well on a team, you know, I think we saw this in Columbus, for instance, like players did well under Greg Berhalter. And when they left, it was like not quite as strong, right? Jesse Zardes like disappeared in LA for giving a lot of perspective on it, right? And so when a player leaves and isn't as exceptional as they were, maybe that's where we could say, oh, that coach must have really like had it figured out, right? They tapped into, as you're saying, those, that kind of unique collection of skills and understandings and abilities.
Yeah, I think that sounds right to me.
Is it ultimately healthy for MLS teams and fans to be patient? Or, you know, to say, if we say it's going to take a couple years, we got to develop these players, we got to develop these coaches. Like, does patience also maybe mean that we're complacent and we're just like accepting, yeah, we're not going to be great. We're not going to be, you know, a top team in the league or a top league in the world if we're always being patient?
Ooh, that's a really good question. And to think about what is the role of, not the role of fans, but the expectation of fans. I'll flip this back around on you. Do you have a natural answer to that that I could riff off of?
My lean is like, yes, but I think we actually want to be a place that sacrifices a bit of quality for patience. You know, like there's a ton of respect for Kansas City around the league, around fan bases, right? And it's partly because it's like this slow moving train, right? Of building and building and building. And while other teams that have these exceptional signings or exceptional seasons, though they take a lot of the spotlight, I think there's something that feels right about the way Kansas City does things and like does it with patience and does it with intention. And it doesn't feel good, at least to me. It doesn't, I don't know, when I look at EPL teams or La Liga teams where it's like every coach is on the hot seat and you lose three games out of five and like guys are on the verge of getting fired or actually getting fired. It's like, this doesn't feel like the kind of thing I want to be involved in, right? Like that's not how I want my work to go, is you stumble a little bit and like you're just fired and cut. So why do I want to endorse that as a fan?
I agree. And I also do think that any new coach, so I've got two places to take it off that to build on what you just said. One is that I do think any good coach has a process in mind, and more specifically, a culture that they need. So yeah, if you give Bob Bradley, Carlos Vela, and Diego Rossi, he's going to win right away. But even if he didn't, I trust that Bob Bradley would win at some point because he knows how to build his process. But you also just have to trust the coach. It goes back to what we said originally. Being good at something takes time and it takes a process, and you have to be willing to let that work itself out. But two is that I also think that there are multiple ways to gratify fans, and that winning is one, but there's others. You can play great soccer. You can have an incredible fan experience with your stadium and cheap ticket prices and cheap food prices. You can play local players. You can play locally grown, you know, and developed players. So while I think that you don't always have to win and you can work on a long-term project and a long-term plan, there are other ways to satiate fans throughout that. And if a club doesn't do any of them, then I'm like, okay with fans being upset.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. You brought up Bob Bradley. Did you watch the LAFC series on ESPN Plus?
Yeah, of course. It was awesome.
I had this feeling coming off of it of like, I want Bob Bradley to be my coach, like in life. Like I want Bob Bradley to wake me up in the morning, and be like, this is what you're going to do today. Like, get at it. And I'm like, okay, Bob, like I'll do it. I don't know. I just thought there was such,
I'm with you. Yeah.
There was so much like passion and heart in the work that you could see like when players used it earlier today, like the idea of running through a wall for a coach, like you can see how somebody like Bob can inspire that.
You're right. Didn't it feel, I mean, one of the cliche things about organizations is you have to have a why. Why am I going to go to work today? Why am I going to care? Why am I going to give my best? Am I just punching holes in a piece of paper, or am I doing a larger goal that supersedes any single action? And it feels like Bob Bradley gave that. Like they are there, not just to play soccer, not just to win games, but to change the way we see soccer and to play this higher form of the sport. And it's like kind of toolish in one way, but it's also awesome. Because it just has this larger meaning for putting in all the work, which I do. It does seem like it gives players the extra edge.
I have to admit that besides obviously the deep Rapids playoff run, the single game I'm looking forward to most this season is going out to LA for August 25th, Galaxy at LAFC, and just like I can't wait for that. Yeah.
Nice.
I was there for the playoff game LAFC and RSL last year, and it was the most fun environment I've ever been in for a game. I just thought it was unbelievable. The 32-52 and like the they're there, you know, 2 hours ahead of time singing and jumping and everything. It was like, it was literally like mid game, but 2 hours before kickoff. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I take it you were cheering for LAFC?
I was jumping on the LAFC bandwagon. You know, you can't cheer for RSL. We have to have some respect here.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of Colorado, we're looking at Houston this weekend. Houston has a draw and two wins so far. They've got Colorado and then San Jose coming up. And it kind of surprised me, like, oh, Houston could be, like, quietly doing something here. Should we be expecting Albert Elise and Mauro Minotas to just be burning our back line this weekend? Like, what does it take for Colorado to have a shot?
Well, I can tell you that I have multiple Colorado players in my fantasy team. So I do expect Colorado to be the better team, if not win. Houston's another one of these teams that I don't know what to make of them. They've got 7 points so far. They look good against Tigres, but if you were to ask me to put money on the line for Albert Elise on any given day, I wouldn't do it. You know, I can watch him and say, that guy's amazing. That guy is a top 10 player in this league when he's on any given day, but it happens so seldom. And when it doesn't happen, not just because Houston's not living up to their potential, but they rely on him so much that when he's not on, it's a little bit like Portland at times when Fernando Adi was there, that if he wasn't on that day, they struggled. And the same thing with Houston. And he's had some games this year where he's been amazing, others when not so much. So I also don't know what to make of Houston at the moment. I know that's another mediocre answer. I apologize.
I mean, it's early in the season, right? So I think that's right.
But I'll add it. Yeah. I mean, Mauro Minotas is a stud now. I wasn't that high on him before. I thought he was a little scrawny. I thought he was on the peripheral of games, that he didn't quite have the exploit. But, like, that dude is a star and one of the elite strikers in the league.
Yep. Yep. I agree with you. I think when you see Elise, like, you know, whether it's, like, U.S. Open Cup or CCL and so forth, I feel like he has these occasional games where you're just like, this guy is unbelievable. And then the next game, it's like, he's out there somewhere, but he's not in the frame on the TV, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I am heartened to hear that Benny Failhaber is back at practice today. So hopefully he's going to be fully fit for this weekend and maybe get close to that ideal six you were talking about. Do you think Colorado can still vie for a playoff spot?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I absolutely think they should vie for a playoff spot. But I do want to talk about the midfield because I wouldn't play Failhaber at the six. I think I would play him at the eight, because not because he couldn't play the six, but just because you still want to utilize his ability in that final third, right? That's an asset that you can't just, as much as I love his ability to get the ball under pressure and to get a team into the possession and to really drive a team's passing, like, he's too good in the final third not to use him there. So I would put him at the eight. I would probably move Kellen Acosta to the 10, because I've decided that Kellen, I thought the same thing when he was in Dallas. Kellen's amazing a lot of things, but he's not a guy that, like, wants to drive possession. He is a final action guy. Use his incredible skill set with both feet, his ability to beat defenders off the first step in the final third. And I'll put Cole Bassett at the six. That's what I'm waiting this whole podcast to say.
What about your man, Jack Price?
I would play him at the other Scheller.
Interesting.
I'm still, like, Jack Price is a very good MLS player. Yeah. He doesn't quite have the rhythm passing that I would like to see from the base of a diamond, in the sense that he's very good at passing, but it's one action. It's like, let me break the lines or let me get out of trouble. He doesn't have a sense of, when I make this pass, how does this pass set up the second, third, fourth, which I do think is what you need if you want to be a possession team. But with that said, it's also unclear how they're using their diamond. Like, are they using their diamond like RSL 2010 that passed teams off the field, or are they using a Juventus Champions League final that was just like a powerful down the middle, they could keep possession, but it was largely, let's just kind of like run you off this field. But either way, I would like to see Bassett at the six. I worry that he doesn't quite have the explosiveness of a Paxton Pomykal to cover ground, but he is very comfortable on the ball, and I'd like to see what he could do as that like fulcrum of possession.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, to me, that's the like pressure point, right? It is getting the ball, especially off a back line that hasn't had much consistency, hasn't had a lot of kind of luck, and to be the person bringing it forward from the six, I would like to see it go well. I don't know if I want to see it be a disaster, but yeah,
I think obviously not. The other part of that too is, yeah. So that's my bold statement for the Rapids right now.
Yeah. Do you think is Cole Bassett continuing to deserve the Cole Bassett hype?
So I do. You know, like I said, I generally think that we overhype young players for a variety of reasons. Because it's fun. I mean, mostly because it's fun. Without actually looking at their skill set and like looking what they're good at. And when I look at Cole Bassett, I see a player that is very good at receiving the ball in tough spots. He is very good at thinking ahead. So he's comfortable on the ball. He thinks well, which are two key aspects of, I think, players becoming pros, becoming good pros. I am a little worried about just his ability to over the first 3 yards. That, you know, the third part of my checklist is, do they just have the basic physical ability to compete at the highest level? We like to think of soccer as this romantic game where athleticism doesn't really matter that much, but really athleticism matters a ton. And elite players across the world are extraordinarily athletic. And I'm still waiting to see that from Bassett. So I do think if you play him at the six with the base of that diamond in the same way that Kyle Beckerman, who similarly doesn't have a ton of explosiveness, I think that's the best way to use Bassett's assets and hide his weaknesses a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, with all the sports science and everything that's in vogue today, like obviously the focus on it is what I would call real grown-ups. And I wonder how much understanding or differentiation there is with what should be done with a 17 or 18 or 19-year-old body versus somebody who's 25. Like, it's got to be different things, you know?
What do you mean? Expand on that for me.
I would think about the nutrition, the like way you approach weight training, the way you approach speed training. Like, his body is not fully grown. So it is probably different. Like, what, and it surprised me a little bit talking about some of these young guys when people say, you know, oh, he doesn't have the speed or whatever. And it's like, he doesn't have the speed right now, but are we confident what his speed is going to be like at 22 or 23? Because to me, that's a huge, huge amount of physical development happens in that time.
Yeah, that's a very fair point.
All right. So your prediction for Houston or Colorado at Houston this weekend? No, Houston at Colorado.
Houston at Colorado. I think Colorado's going to win. And I don't feel great about it, but I think, you know, it's close to 50-50, but I do think the Rapids are going to win. I'll say 2-1. Is that a fair guess?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there are many clean sheets in our future, so I agree on the one. The two, I think the opportunities will be there for the two, and we'll see if they can both get in the net.
Yeah. You know what? One thing I do think they can get clean sheets, excuse me for why, but I would say the thing about the Rapids this year, as I said about the Galaxy last year, is you can look at the back four, maybe the center backs, and say they're mistake prone or they're not at the elite playoff level, but there's a ways to cover that up, right? If you don't want your defenders to have to deal with a ton of pressure, then you've got to keep the ball and you've got to counter press as soon as you lose it so that the other team doesn't actually have time to attack your center backs. And the Rapids have been dropping. Like they basically haven't been a super aggressive front half counter-pressing or pressing team, which confuses me because that is how I would shield a back line that I was worried about. So that's what I'll keep an eye on for the Rapids is, can they actually put pressure on the ball and try and win the ball back before it even gets in their own defensive third?
All right, sir. Thank you for your insights, and we'll hope you're correct this week and hope to talk to you soon.
Dude, thanks for letting me go on my little tangent. This is awesome.
So in that interview with Bobby, we talked about a lot of things, but one interesting point that came up was around Cole Bassett and the potential of playing the six. Jordan, what do you think about that?
I think it's a good idea because one of the things we talked about earlier in this podcast is setting the tone and setting the pace in the midfield. And I think Cole has the ability to play out of situations. And Bobby also mentioned letting these young kids make mistakes and learn from it and keeping them in there, right? And giving them a couple opportunities to learn and grow and work through that. And I think as we've seen that, we saw that with Cole in the last game. Everything's not going to always be perfect, right? But I think he can get the ball and he can connect those short passes. Does he have the ability, like Jack Price does, to ping the ball to the wing and switch the point of attack quickly? Yes. But he also has Jack in there. So once he sets the pace and starts to kind of shift the defense a little bit in the center of the field, then Jack could even do that too, right? So I kind of like the idea. And I really like the idea of having Kellen higher on the field because I just don't think we've seen the best of Kellen yet. And I want to see the best of Kellen because when we've gotten glimpses of that in his time in Dallas and his time with the national team, it's like super exciting to see, right? I think there were little moments in the game against Dallas. He showed up and he did some really good things, but I don't want that to be little moments. I want it to be more consistent. And I think if you put him higher on the field, he might have the ability to do that.
He definitely strikes you as kind of a momentum player, right? When things start going his way, they keep going his way. And then other times he can kind of disappear on the field, right, Kellen?
And I don't really, you know, I don't think he loves to play defense. And like some midfielders don't. Like, some midfielders like the back and forth, playing defense, getting forward. And, like, I just strike him. He strikes me as a player in watching him play that's not his jam. And that's okay. Like, let's work to make him get in the best situations that he can to affect the game in a positive manner.
Something I saw really to that point during the game is that Kellen had this moment. And I don't remember if it was towards the end of the first half or early in the second half. They were attacking left to right on the screen, if that helps, if you remember, Connor. Okay. So whichever half that was.
Second half?
Okay, yeah.
First half.
Wow, we're getting...
Second half, we were attacking.
50-50 chance.
So during the game, they were attacking.
Watching his hands, and I backward it.
Tommy scored on the north end of the stadium.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So there was this point in the game where Kellen got the ball, and he shrugged off, like, two Dallas defenders as he was, like, you know, making a play up the field. And ultimately, you know, made a pass that didn't really go anywhere. But, like, that moment was, like... That's what Kellen can bring if, like, everything on the team is clicking. He brings that strength and, like, physicality to the midfield that Price and other players don't really actually have. There's no, like, sort of huge physical presence in the Rapids midfield, I feel. And, you know, I think Kellen can provide that when things are going well.
If Cole is at the six, is it a defensive downgrade versus Price?
I'd say it might be even an upgrade. Price has never really been huge on tackling in that sort of deep-lying playmaker role. Like, and that's not sort of really what Hudson's looking for out of that role more than anything.
He's
looking
for
more of a passer,
yeah.
Right? I mean, I think Cole's an upgrade on as far as defense is concerned, but that's not necessarily an important upgrade for the position.
I think what Price does well in that is he shields the back line and he breaks up those channels of passes into the front runner so that he doesn't have to tackle a lot of the times because he's in the right passing lane, or he tempts that passing lane so then they play the ball and he's like, oop, that's mine. And that's something that, you know, I think would be interesting to see if Cole has that same awareness and ability. I mean, the kid's always checking his shoulder and seeing what's around him, so I would think he would have that ability. I know he wants to play higher on the field, but I think right now that could be a good place for him in the way that the team is kind of like forming.
It seems like a lot of pressure to put on the young kid when you know the defensive line is struggling, is having a lot of turnover, and be like, okay, you're connecting the most vulnerable part of the team to the whole offense.
But I think you could also play in a way in the midfield that you play with two sixes. So defensively, you're playing with two sixes where Price and Bassett are next to each other and kind of on this like pendulum swinging from the left and the right, covering the center of the midfield. But then in attack, Price can push higher up on the field and then Cole can sit in that pocket. And there should be some fluidity there, right? Like Cole will be there if he's playing the six most likely, but then he's comfortable going high. Jack is comfortable coming in there, and then that proposes something different for the defense to have to shift and figure out.
I'd say the vast majority of like the first string Rapids midfield can sort of play in either mm-hmm. that eight or that six. Like the only one I'm really coming to my mind that doesn't really play the six or has really never played the six is Johan. Like I don't think he's ever played the six in his career. He's typically been more of a box-to-box guy.
Another puzzle piece in the midfield is Sam Nicholson, who got back on the field last weekend and you would think is now in the mix regularly. What do we make of what Sam adds to the midfield combination?
I think he replaces Cole Bassett.
I think replaces is too strong. There's minutes for everybody.
I mean, I don't think Cole's playing.
Cole's going to keep getting
poorly.
Minutes.
I don't think he's playing bad. I just think when you look at the midfield and you look at who is replaceable, it's Cole Bassett right now. Because Sam Nicholson needs to be on the field.
You're running into a thing where when Benny's healthy, he's going to start. Mezquita's healthy.
So kick Mezquita out.
Wait a minute. What have you seen from Sam Nicholson in his career as a Rapid?
Fearlessness.
Fearlessness. And I think puts him guaranteed that says he has to be getting minutes.
I don't think he had a bad game for the Rapids last year. Like, I think he plays really well.
Right, but is what he offers unique? Is there something that Sam Nicholson gives you that none of the other members of that enormous midfield depth chart
have?
Wait,
I have a question for you. We can simplify this very quickly. Auto 11, Sam Nicholson.
With what we have right
Auto
now?
Auto 11, Sam Nicholson.
Sure.
Okay, that's not really how you play the game.
I'm not on he has to play, but the thing that I think stands out from Sam that from any other player on the team is maybe not any other player now, because I think Kai has this like fearlessness going forward of like, I don't care if I'm doing the right thing or not, I'm just going to try to make something happen. And I think Sam has that. And when he plays, he goes forward, he wants to take players on. He said that's one of his favorite things to do in the game is to go one-on-one with someone and see if he can beat them, right? And that's just something different. There's not a lot of players on the team, I think, would say that's my strength, right? Like, that's something that I enjoy to do. And there has to be, I talk about this a lot, of like defensive structure, but then when you're going forward, there has to be an ability to see what's happening and go with the flow of the game and to feel the game out, like literally feel the game. Well, I know that this is supposed to be on, this run is supposed to be on, but as that run happened, the dribble is on now, right? So I have to feel that and go for that. And I think he has a good pulse on like what opens up when the game is happening.
Right, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is that Abby's saying that Sam is almost irreplaceable.
Say that. I said Cole Bassett is replaceable.
Right, but you know,
but you're also talking about, you're saying Sam needs to get minutes over everybody except Benny.
No, I'm not necessarily saying. Like, who would you put? Like, who else do you think should be in the midfield?
I think they're all deserving of minutes, and with a congested schedule like we're going to have,
I didn't say like throw them down to the springs.
It works perfectly. I don't know. I think the depth.
Yeah, it's nice to
the
have.
Depth at midfield. This is a good problem to have.
Right, but I'm saying when Sam Nicholson comes back, I feel like he's going to get playing time.
I just feel like you have a player.
Very, very simple argument here. It's just Sam Nicholson's going to play.
You have a player that has only ever played in one of like the attacking front three positions or as a wing back.
But I think that was out of necessity. It was because everybody was injured last year, so who else was going to play there?
Sure, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm just saying like, it's just hard for me to comprehend that he becomes this very valuable, crucial midfielder
after
having like no minutes in that position last year with the Rapids. Like, that's the issue.
Would that be like the strangest thing that Anthony Hudson has ever done, though?
No. I actually don't know the answer to that.
Speaking of the future, this Saturday, your Rapids will host the Houston Dynamo at Dick's Sporting Goods Park with a kickoff at 7 p.m. Forecast right now calls for 41 degrees and a 23% chance of rain.
It's a bit nippy.
A little nippy, but not that bad.
It was originally supposed to snow, so.
Yeah, I think we're taking the snow.
Oh, it's not snowing
now. I mean, we're taking the rain. Yeah.
I'll take it.
We like the rain. Abby, are there any players you're expecting to see this
Sam
weekend?
Sam Nicholson, apparently.
Who were like
Sam Nicholson.
Yeah, well, how do you, what do you expect different in either starting lineup or in kind of substitute appearances from the last couple weeks?
Well, I mean, Rubio will be back, so I assume that he'll be back in the lineup because they're playing tonight, and then, well, not tonight, when this, whatever. They're playing right now, and then he'll be back.
As of the time of this recording.
just say at the time of recording, Tuesday night.
I couldn't think to say that. So I think Rubio will be back. I don't know what Hudson's going to do with that back line. Like, maybe Opari comes in and gets some time. Maybe he'll just keep doing the same thing and think that he'll get a different result like last year. I don't really know. So,
but we haven't seen the same thing.
We've seen similar results, though.
Have we seen the same set of center backs yet?
No,
but I'm saying getting the same results.
What's the same thing he's done?
I think you have to keep this back line the same.
Yeah, I think it'll be Axel and Tommy.
Okay, that's fine.
I think we'll see Benny and Diego. Benny will be back from the flu. Diego
and
will be back.
And maybe Sam starting, clearly.
Abby's guy, Sam Nicholson.
Apparently. I didn't know he was my guy until tonight.
Has there been anything public about how far away Court Ford is?
I don't believe so.
When the injury report first came out, his timetable was in months. So like that's when, like during December when the injury report came out, right before they met up for preseason, like the timetable was months. So like 2 to 3, I think.
Well, unless something changed like today, he's still on the sideline. He's not like getting into scrimmages or anything yet. So I would say that's still some time out, yeah.
Joseph, we have to assume Kamara and Rubio are back up front. But what is your predicted midfield this weekend?
Yes, Joseph, right. Tell us.
I have the midfield that I want.
Okay.
And yeah, we'll have take the that. Midfield that I think will,
okay.
will get the start, right? So we're gonna circle clockwise from the top of the diamond. What I want, like I say, what it feels like every week on this podcast, I want Benny in the 10. I want to see that happen. Maybe he's not fit enough to do that just yet. I know he's coming off the flu. I know he had a baby. I know he's had a lot going on.
His wife had a baby.
Sorry, his wife had a baby.
They both had a baby.
Benny ain't have the baby.
That's true. Point is,
as the parent representative here, I will say that they both had a baby. Yes, continue, yeah. Joseph.
I want to see Benny up top. I want to see Acosta and Bassett as the two shuttlers, and I want to see Price as the deep-lying playmaker. That's what I want to see. What I think we'll see is Mosquito up top. We'll see Acosta and Price as the shuttlers, and I think we'll see Failhaber as the six.
So then when Benny takes the 10, where do you see – is Mosquito going to the bench in your eyes, or do you see him moving around to somewhere else?
I value Bassett as a shuttler in that pivot sort of 2-6 role more than I value Mosquito. And I think if you have Acosta on there, that if you want to have 2 sixes in that midfield diamond or two players that can also play as a six, like you would have to take out Acosta to bring in Mosquito in.
Tell me right or wrong. It feels to me like Mosquito is in a spot he could lose. Like if he doesn't find kind of his thing, his position, or have kind of a breakout performance sometime soon, he could end up the fifth or sixth man on that midfield depth
chart. I think Mosquito is one of those guys who, like pretty much everybody in the midfield, is versatile. Like Mosquito can play the 10 and the 8 on either side. And I think he could also play up top if necessary. Like I think he's a guy who, just based on his versatility alone, will continue receiving minutes.
Based on how I've seen Mosquito play over the first 4 games, I definitely agree with a lot of what we were talking about in the earlier episodes about how his best role is probably going to be 8. That's just because it gives him a lot more freedom to just sort of do his thing and, you know, get the ball forward without, you know, having the – without, like, occupying like that center attacking midfielder spot that requires, like, a really laser focus and, you know – strong mentally to make passes into the final third.
Jordan, we were talking earlier about start of games. What is your kind of like realistic, hopeful expectation? Like, what do you want to see in this first 30 minutes?
I want to see
3 goals.
Realistically, yes, 3 goals. I'd like to see the Rapids get on the board early. And I think that at home, you have the ability to they have the ability to do that, right? And set the standard of what the pace of the game is going to be like from the beginning. And
Yeah, I'm thinking that they're going to get a goal in the first 30 minutes. And I am very much so like the Rapids, really any team. I think you have to score two goals a game to win in this league. You have to. And if you score two goals a game, you are going to be in a spot where you are at least in every single contest. So getting a goal early on and taking a little bit of the wind out of this Houston sail that seems to be puffing up and, you know, haven't lost, I think that would really be a good way to start.
Connor, if you're thinking about game plan and defense, would you be more concerned about Elise or Manotas?
That's like living on the moon and being more concerned about the lack of oxygen or the lack of gravity.
I don't know if you'd be concerned about the lack of gravity.
I would be.
It's like a bonus of living on the moon.
Like holding you down, keeping you from Earth.
But he is farther away from all that hot air.
I think that's a good question. Their whole front three is really good, and I think if Manotas plays up top and Elise plays on the right and Memo Rodriguez plays on the left and then Tomas Martinez plays right underneath him, that's just a scary attack. But to pick up on what Jordan said earlier, you know, like everyone is kind of like seeing Houston play well right now and the sails are kind of puffing up on the Houston Dynamo bandwagon, and that's totally deserved. Like when you don't lose in three mm-hmm. matches, that's deserved. They haven't played on the road, and they conceded first two out of three times. So I think maybe, you know, for all their speed and quickness, they're maybe not the quick starting team either. And playing at elevation, getting up early, getting a quick lead, and being able to play with a quick lead will be hugely beneficial after the 75th minute.
When you think about those two players that we just talked about in Manotas and Elise, one of the things that I think is interesting in the way Houston plays is they throw their front runners. When they're starting to build up, their two wingers will press the back line and try to break the back line, and then Manotas will pop off the back line and pick up the ball in a huge pocket of space a lot of times between the midfield and the back line. And that's why he's so successful, right? Because then he can spring it to those players, and he's in the middle of the pitch, and all he has to do is get into the box. So I think in some ways, like, the Rapids have to be, one, aware of that. But I think he's the one that is kind of trying to he sets the pace. If he can get in those spots and then connect with what's their new number 10, Martinez?
Tomas Martinez.
Yeah, Martinez. Then he can start to feel himself in the game. But if we don't allow him to get on the ball in that pocket of space, that's going to set his game off, right? And those are the kind of things that a player has to track him, or that pass off between the back line and the midfielder has to be super sharp in order to bump him and get him off his game, because that's not a player you want to start to feel like, for him to start feeling himself and getting the ball more and more and more.
Abby, what are you going to have to see this weekend to feel excited?
Wasn't the question that I was expecting. Well, it's still a similar answer. I think I just want to see like a complete game. Like, even if they don't jump out the gate and start super fast, because, you know, like they were saying that Houston isn't a super fast starting team. Like, we could take advantage of that, or we could just kind of sit back and like play the pace of the game. Either way, like, I just want to see a complete game. I don't want to see like dumb mistakes here, like guys just streaking through the box without being marked and then getting easy goals and things like that. Obviously, I'd like to see us score some goals. So I just want to see a good game. I'd like to see them win and get 3 points so that we can not be in the competition to get the first win anymore with the other couple teams in the Western Conference. So, yeah, 3 points.
I want the win, too, just to clarify.
It'd be really nice to get a multiple goal shutout win.
Yeah?
But I don't think
like
that's...
a 3-0?
I'm into that.
I mean,
I could be down for that.
Connor's favorite, the 3-0.
3-0 Pids. God bless, go Pids.
On that note, let's do predictions.
3-0 Pids.
Give us one goal scorer, Connor.
How about I give you all three? I think it's going to be Dylan Serna, Keegan Rosenberry, and an own goal.
What? Always the own goal. Joseph.
One of these weeks I'm going to be right. You're all going to look silly.
I'm going to say 2-1 Rapids. Yeah. I think they get the altitude advantage. I think Houston's going to struggle really late game, and the entire game is going to depend entirely on how well the Rapids start the game. I think if they start the game well, I think they finish it well. I think if they start it poorly, it's a little bit more of a nail biter. We might see a draw or something like that. But
I'm going to say, like, my pie in the sky optimistic score is 3-1. I feel like maybe 1-0 could be a little more realistic.
Who's score is that?
Well, the Rapids.
The Rapids. Okay. Yes.
Who are you getting for the one?
I don't know.
Own goal.
Sure.
Jordan.
2-1 is my prediction. I think it's going to be a close game. I think the Rapids are going to go up 2 and they're going to concede 1.
Wait, so does this mean it's not in your contract with Altitude Sports Network that you have to predict every game as 3-0? Because, I mean,
kind of just going we've been led to believe
otherwise. I think I've predicted 2-1. I predicted 2-1 last week, too, and but just not for the team that I
That was my prediction for last week.
Yeah. I respect your prediction integrity, Jordan, and would never question you in such a way. My prediction, I think I'm going with the 3-1. And I think Kamara for 2.
A brace.
Okay.
First Rapids brace of the season.
Any last thoughts on the Houston game?
I like their kits.
The orange?
I like their kits, yeah.
I liked them when they didn't have the sponsor on them.
I'm not so hung up on sponsors.
What's the away kit?
The black one.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The little sunset.
Black kits look nice.
Yeah. Black always makes you feel like,
is orange too close to burgundy? Will they have to wear their black kits? Will it be a clash kit?
I don't know, because they let New England come wearing red jerseys, and it was red versus burgundy in the past.
Oh, yikes.
There's only one way to find out, and that's it for episode 6 of the N Line. If you have questions or comments about the show, talk to us on the Rapids subreddit, tweet us at N Line Podcast, email us at contact@nlinepodcast.com. For myself, Jordan, Connor, Abby, Joseph, Paul, and Michael on the soundboard, Nick in the edit booth, thanks for listening, and have a great week. Thanks to
Barbara Walters.
Two-take Jeff.
Barbara Walters.
Here it goes.
Two-take Jeff. Here we go.
Oh, by the way, I walked into that room over there where the snacks were.
Yeah. Oh, there's a meeting.
Yeah, I got so weird looks. And as I was leaving, somebody got up, and she was like, do you need anything? I was like, no, just Starburst. And she's like, you just came in for Starburst. And I was like, yup.
Yep.
So I think maybe everyone else knew that room was off limits.
We maybe needed some name tags for you. All right. Don't touch my script. Oh, yeah. Did anybody see any questions that they're like not?
I mean, I didn't watch the game, but I'll answer the questions. I'm ready.
Yeah,
Why are you here?
People want to hear from me. But I watched our game. I think I kind of black out when I'm watching a game because then I don't remember it afterwards.
I watched the end of Orlando and Red Bulls on the bus.
Okay.
Let's go. Sounds exciting. Here we go. Welcome to episode 6 of the N Line. It's Tuesday, March 26th, and today...